passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
And we are live with our UFC 301 review here at Post Wrestling, John Pollock and the returning Eric Marcotte, who, when he was looking at his schedule, he was like, you know, Pollock, UFC 300, I'll take UFC 301. If I'm going to take one show off, I want to be back in time for 301. And here he is, Eric Marcotte.
Well, what's there even to say about UFC 300? I mean, you watch the show and say, oh, the fights were good. Who cares? Grow up. This is a real UFC card right here. UFC 301. This is grit.
I want unpredictability. I mean, anyone could have seen that Holloway Gaethje finish coming a mile away. I mean, what Eric wanted to see was, is Jonathan Martinez going to step up? Is he going to extend that streak to 7 in a row beating Jose Aldo? And that's what we are here to discuss. It was a very busy day going on. We had Wrestling Dontaku. We had Backlash in the middle of the day. We had a Canelo fight. There was a hockey game, I understand, going on Saturday night.
Allegedly.
As well. If we're talking about very predictable outcomes, Austin did not disappoint. I believe that's 4 game sevens that they have had Toronto Maple Leafs number in. So the streak continues. But we have a big show to run down. We have a show to run down.
Let's
here.
Be honest here.
Which, I mean, listen, this card had its moments, but if you are looking at this and you were asked to pay the exact same amount for this pay-per-view as you were a month ago for UFC 300, with that is going to come a certain level of expectation of what is pay-per-view worthy. And I'm sorry, but as entertaining as I thought this main event was, this was not a pay-per-view worthy card in my estimation. Am I wrong, Eric?
Not at all. This looked a lot like a UFC Apex show, complete with Anthony Smith, an Anthony Smith showcase match. I mean,
I'm surprised they didn't just put him at the desk right afterwards. Give us the full fight night feel of an Anthony Smith involved pay-per-view.
It sounds like they were trying to make some things happen for this one. The Jose Aldo return was kind of a late addition just to get something going for this card. But
could you imagine this pay-per-view main card without Jose Aldo? And we should say the original hope was that this would be Jose Aldo and Dominic Cruz, which I feel that would have had appealed to a sweet spot for Eric Marcotte.
That would have been the sweet spot. In fact, I think they probably would have just headlined with that if they were able to make that come together. But alas, it was Jonathan Martinez who stepped up to the plate.
Well, we're going to get into this card. It was headlined by the flyweight championship, Alexandre Pantoja, defending against Steve Carell Ersig. And somebody that, man, they were really... I mean, this was someone that I feel got like an unfair shake throughout this week, mainly because he's headlining a pay-per-view. But, you know, Steve Ersig, he's looked very good in his 3 UFC fights and ended up having a super competitive fight here in the main event. But again, when you are headlining a pay-per-view, it comes with a lot of, like, you are also selling people on a $65 card. And I would have ventured to imagine that even the regular UFC consumer was looking up Steve Ersig on Tapology this week.
Definitely. He's been in the company for like maybe a year. I think Pantoja is probably the first top 10 opponent he's faced. This was a huge step up. I mean, not a household name in the slightest.
Yes. The first man who can say that he pivoted from Matt Schnell to pay-per-view headliner from one fight to the next.
Joe Soto-esque.
Very Joe Soto-esque. That, yes. So we go into the fight, and first round, it is Steve Ersig is coming out, and he ends up Pantoja going to the body, and we see Ersig start bleeding early on, and they informed us this was due to a clash of heads, and Pantoja gets the takedown. He's working from half guard, moves to side control, administering ground and pound, and Ersig has some very good scrambles throughout this fight to get out of danger against Pantoja, but this was a pretty clear round for Alexandre Pantoja in the first round. Things get more interesting in the second when Pantoja, after getting a takedown, he moves to the mount and Usyk defends getting out of the mount, reversing and get to his feet. And throughout, you would see these bursts from Usyk, and there was the concern, man, is this guy going to just like exude or get all of this energy out and tire himself? Not so much the case, as he starts putting combinations together and clips him with a knee, and Usyk is hit, tries for the takedown, and it's Usyk that stops and lands with another combination. And while the takedowns were there for Pantoja, he executed 9 of them throughout the fight. Certainly on the feet, it was Steve Usyk who was coming at him with different angles. I thought that this was Usyk's round after two. How were you assessing Steve Usyk after 10 minutes?
I had the fight scored the same way as you. I thought Usyk was looking really good. I mean, Pantoja is, he's not a fighter who's ever afraid to stand with anybody. But with that being said, his striking technique is always a bit sloppy, to say. He just kind of marches forward. He has the whole zombie outlook where he's just stumbling forward, throwing hands. The commentary team will always go over the same thing where he looks like he's exhausted at all times. And it's easy to counter him, but he makes it work for himself, even if Usyk was getting the better of some of these trades early.
The third round, I thought, was the round that you could have the most discussion about who prevailed here. So Pantoja puts Usyk against the fence, and then Usyk cracks him with this right elbow, and he busts open Pantoja, who is rocked, and he is going for the takedown, and he is just leaking blood here. And Pantoja manages to get to the back, and at the end of this, it was Pantoja who did land the larger volume, and he did control Usyk throughout most of this, but the most significant strike of this round was this elbow. And I mean, I leaned towards Pantoja in this round, but I had a real struggle on this round about if you give this round to Usyk or not. And for many, like, depending on who you scored this round for is probably who you scored the fight for.
Yeah, this was the closest round of the fight. I gave it to Pantoja as well. While the most damaging strike was that elbow, I think Pantoja outlanded him by a significant amount, and I think by and large his punches seem to be doing the more damage, although he didn't get the cut that Usyk did. I did think this was a Pantoja round, but of course I see the case for Usyk, because this elbow that he landed really caused Pantoja to start leaking towards the end of the round.
Well, then this was a new feature on the broadcast. We got both corners informing their fighters of what their scorecards are, and how would you like this for scoring? Okay, Pantoja's corner says, "You've won all three rounds." Like, there is no debate in their mind. Even the second, and especially the third, he's won those. Usyk's corner, not in disagreement, telling their challenger, "You've lost all three rounds." I mean, Jesus. Like, we have the eternal optimist and the pessimist on Usyk's side, which, I mean, I'm certain there's some kind of psychology to it as well, of telling your fighter, "Hey, you're down, we need a finish." But, I mean, to be charitable, Usyk, you could argue had won two rounds after these three. I mean, would not be out of the realm of possibility, but his corner, no, you're down three.
I've never seen such a close fight where the corners were in complete agreement that every single round was won in dominant fashion by one fighter. I mean, we'll talk about it more at the end, but you know, you could say what you will about Pantoja's coaches giving him that advice. This advice costs Steve Usyk big time.
Well, in the fourth round, you have, Pantoja definitely, maybe it's a byproduct of being told, okay, I'm up three. I was thinking maybe it's a lot closer, because he kind of was like, he was definitely catching himself in the fourth round, probably prepared for a fifth. And it's Usyk landing with an uppercut and left hook, and Pantoja comes back with a right hand, and his output is down in this round, and Usyk is throwing combinations, forcing Pantoja to defend his takedown attempts, and that is probably tiring him. And then another uppercut near the end of the round. This feels like a pretty consistent judgment that Usyk won this fourth round. And so my card, which I'm guessing was yours too, Eric, was even going into the fifth.
Definitely. Pantoja seemed to take this round off, and I had it 2-2 going into the fifth, although some people may have it 4-0 Pantoja. I don't know.
Well, I bet you Ursig's corner, you're down four. You lost that one too. So Ursig gets his first takedown at the beginning of the fifth round. This was his only takedown in the fight. And Pantoja scrambles, takes his back, and there is a blatant fence grab by Steve Ursig. And boy, is he lucky that it was Mark Goddard as the referee, because we'll talk later in this card about a fence grab. And it was an immediate point deduction. And all I'm stating is that I have no problem with point deductions, but I do feel there should be some consistency. But man, would there have been outrage if there was a point deduction here in the fifth that would have literally cost Ursig the fight at this point in the fifth before it was over with. But no call on that. Ursig is free of the back control and lands another elbow, and Ursig then shoots for a takedown, and this is going to be the takedown that haunts this man in his dreams and nightmares, as this takedown is instantly reversed, and Pantoja lands into his guard, moves to half, is delivering body shots, and Ursig is briefly mounted and is... that's how the round ends, with Pantoja peppering in strikes and full control. Pantoja wins the fifth round, and the unanimous decision is called 48-47 twice, and one having it 49-46 as Alexandra Pantoja retains the flyweight title. And in a line that I will always associate, one of the saddest post-fight reflections by Steve Ursig, who is asked about the loss, and he ends up by just saying, "I blew it." And that was just, I felt so bad for this guy at the end. Dude, this was a super entertaining fight, though. It was close. I think Steve Ursig performed admirably, and save for that awful decision for a takedown in the fifth round, like, this was a fight that was very much within reach of him winning. And I think he will at least now be an established contender at this division. And I would not be surprised if we see these two fight again, because this is the division where, believe me, it is not one and done when it comes to challenging for a title.
Definitely. Really impressive performance from Ursig against the big jump in competition here. I'm circling back to our earlier discussion. I do think Ursig's corner let him down a bit here, because this was a fight that was very winnable for him going into that fifth round against a tired Pantoja. And he was clearly getting the better of him on the feet by this point in the fight. And to be going for those takedowns where Pantoja easily reversed him and took top position twice, ultimately securing the round, that's what cost Ursig the title. If he keeps that fifth round on the feet, he wins on two of those scorecards in all likelihood. So definitely a disappointing end of the fight for him. But with that being said, impressive win for Pantoja still. This is his second flyweight title defense now, and I think that moves him into second behind Demetrius
Johnson. I think
Johnson.
He's right behind Demetrius now, okay? So that's how much of a hot potato title this is at 125 pounds. And let's remember, dude, Steve Ursig came into this fight, he was ranked 10th. So this is going to be a case where this guy coming off a loss is probably going to jump positions in the flyweight ranks. And I don't think it'll be that long before he's fighting for the title again, whether it's Pantoja or somebody else in the interim that Pantoja fights next.
But while the flyweight certainly lacks star power, there's no shortage of talented fighters, though. Mm-hmm. So it's always hard to say who's going to be climbing the ladder in this division. It's hard to say who's going to be fighting for the title next, especially when Pantoja has beaten Brandon Moreno and Brandon Royval like 12 times. So I think he indicated he'd be taking some time off after this one. He's fought a lot in the last 12 months or so, and that'll give some time to see who the next contender is who will emerge.
Yeah, that'll give him some time until UFC comes knocking and they want him on that Australia card later this year, and then his time off will probably be reduced by several months. And he fights in August.
I was talking about Pantoja, unless they're pulling him out.
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant Ursig was saying he was going to take some
UFC
time
Australia headliner, Alexander Pantoja, back in action.
I don't know if he's going to be headlining another pay-per-view this year, but we will see. Plenty of, second from the top title fights in Pantoja's future, potentially. Then we will go to the biggest star on the show, Jose Aldo Jr. I mean, to put this into perspective, the last time Jose Aldo fought in the octagon, Joe Biden was the president of the United States.
Oh, absolutely wild times.
August of 2022. Can you remember? How old were you in 2022, Eric? I mean,
I can't remember. It was too long ago.
Just a whole new generation now exposed to Jose Aldo Jr. here at the ripe old age of 37. coming back to take on Jonathan Martinez. Pretty much, Jose, please save this card. And as we learned this week when he was interviewed by CBS Sports, this is the last fight on Jose Aldo's deal, and he opted not to sign a new deal coming into this one. So in theory, unless there's any red tape that he has to cut through, he would effectively be a free agent coming off of this fight. And that does bring about this was a great audition for this man to, whether it be boxing or whoever wants to throw money at this guy. I don't know what the options are in MMA beyond UFC for Jose Aldo, but I don't know if a PFL tournament is in the immediate future is what I'm trying to say.
That would be a lot of fights for one Jose Aldo in a single calendar year. He discussed his future a bit after the fight. We're getting past things right now, but he talks about it a bit.
He won and looked great.
He won. He looks amazing. And he said he'd be down to re-sign with the UFC if they match whatever deal he gets from whomever. So I imagine his future will lie in the octagon.
Yeah, pay me and I'll be back. So in the first round, it's Martinez using some inside leg kicks, and Aldo is just his speed was a key in this fight. At 37, and a guy that, I mean, if you were not around when this guy was fighting at featherweight, it was always drama about whether this guy, the weight cuts he went through to make featherweight. I always remember here in Toronto at UFC 129, and they had a panel of all the current champions, and Jose Aldo, I believe, had to leave the stage because his weight cut was just a mess. And then when the decision was made, I'm going down to bantamweight, it was always just assumed if this guy's leaving a weight class, he's going up to lightweight. And, you know, he has made bantamweight every time out, and he made it again here and did not look compromised at all. And I mean, he did look like Skeletor at the weigh-ins on Friday, to be fair. I don't think this is a smooth weight cut for him, but regardless, I mean, he was, God knows how much weight he packed on in the next 24 hours.
It's always been he's always looked like death getting on that scale, but he's also never missed, and his performance has never seemed to be compromised the next day. So whatever he's doing, it's working.
So we did see some leg kick. This is not the crazy leg kick output from Jose Aldo, but he did hit 10 of them throughout the fight and goes to the head and body into the second. It's Aldo attacking the body and was having a lot of success and just using his speed to just draw in Martinez, and then would just go to an angle, attack the body, and just mixing up his strikes. And it was enough. Martinez had a fine fight here. He was just outmatched, and I think clearly in the speed department. There were several counter strikes by Martinez near the end of the round, but Aldo just fired back as well, also working behind his jab too, and that continued into the third. Martinez did crack him with a left hand, but then Aldo comes back, wobbles him, goes to the body, and he's landing knees from the clinch, takes Martinez down. Jose Aldo with a takedown that they note on the broadcast is his first takedown since Ricardo Lamas a decade ago, which, dude, Wikipedia here, Daniel Cormier, is stating, wait a minute, wasn't there a takedown late in the fight against Marlon Vera? And John Anik is like, we'll look that one up. Was never ruled a takedown in the Marlon Vera fight. So was not technically a takedown, but Daniel Cormier was on top of that. That was clearly on his mind. But yes, technically the first takedown for Jose Aldo in 10 years, and worked inside of the guard of Martinez to end the fight. 30-27 was my scorecard, and I think it was everyone's scorecard. You could not ask for a stronger return for Jose Aldo, who I think ups his market value as someone that if he were to, this is what we were discussing earlier this week, is that a Jose Aldo win, it's very interesting of how you approach this if you're UFC. This is a super deep weight class, but Jose Aldo is a major name inside of a deep weight class that is going to leapfrog several people if they want to go that direction, and he had the performance to justify it.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting to see where Jose Aldo slots in this division if he does continue with the UFC. When he left after the loss to Merab, he was ranked the third bantamweight, and if you just look at the bantamweight picture right now, he probably still slots in at that exact spot when you look at the people below him that he holds wins over, like Chito Vera or
let me read Bonner. You the rankings here, and tell me where you would think that he fits in. So you have Sean O'Malley as champion, Merab, followed by Corey Sandhagen, Piotr Jan, Marlon Vera, Henry Cejudo, Davison Figueiredo. So that's your top six. Does Aldo crack the top six for you?
Oh, yeah. Easily above those last three names. I mean, Henry Cejudo, what's he done since he came back? Why is he?
I would love to see Aldo and Henry Cejudo. Yeah. That'd be a great fight.
I'd love to see that fight.
The takedown defense of Jose Aldo against Henry Cejudo, I think that would be a tremendous fight. Like, that's a fight you can absolutely put, like, as a co-feature on a pay-per-view. So I'm very curious. This is the kind of performance that I think it depends on what Jose Aldo is looking for. If there's some big, I don't know, thriller event that's out there that wants to just spend crazy money, maybe that's what he wants to do as well. This guy deserves to make some big bank this late in his career. But it was a great performance from him. How did you feel Jonathan Martinez looked in this fight? This ends a 6-fight win streak for him. Where are you on Jonathan Martinez and his hopes at bantamweight?
I thought this was actually a fine performance from Jonathan Martinez. He's impressed me a lot lately. He's just been running through a lot of decent opposition. And honestly, at bantamweight, you're going to have a tough time finding bad fighters to get wins against. He's been fighting good guys, and he's been getting some solid wins. Obviously, Jose Aldo, an aging fighter, this made a lot of sense to put Jonathan Martinez in the slot to get him a big win to propel himself up the rankings. But Aldo is surprisingly just much, much quicker than him. And you could see he just had so much more variance to his offense. His feints were leaving Martinez frozen at points. So it's still a while to go, perhaps, before fighting that elite level of competition. But I don't think he lost too much stock here either.
Well, his teammate, Anthony Smith, had his back against the wall here. He had lost 3 of his last 4 and fought 3 times last year, had a unanimous decision loss to Johnny Walker in May, a split win over Ryan Spann, and coming off a TKO loss to Khalil Roundtree Jr. in December. He's taking on the undefeated Vitor Petrino at light heavyweight. And Smith is defending well, but man, he is, he's definitely eating these right hands from Petrino. And Petrino goes to the body and, in his own miscalculation, decides to go to lift and slam Anthony Smith. And Anthony Smith, having some Dustin Poirier on the mind, decides, you know what? There's that guy's neck. And he applies his guillotine. And as he is sent down to the mat, this is a tight guillotine. And Petrino taps in 2 minutes as Anthony Smith gets his victory here in his 57th professional fight at the age of 35. UFC analyst Anthony Smith is victorious.
This was like the most telegraphed guillotine you will ever see, too. Like before Petrino even committed to the takedown, you could see the gears turning in Anthony Smith's head saying, you know what, I should guillotine this guy. I guess Petrino didn't see that, and it resulted in the quick submission here. There's not too much to say. This was clearly Anthony Smith was just the more experienced fighter here, and this was a pretty easy win for him, all things considered.
Yep, I think it's the light heavyweight division. It's not the craziest path to the top, but I think people would be getting ahead of themselves if they feel Anthony Smith. This is just the start of like a big run towards title opportunity. I think this extends Anthony Smith's career where you can be a fine fight night headliner.
I mean, it's light heavyweight. Anything can happen. All these guys are the same. I mean, you could just do Anthony Smith versus Alex Pereira like tomorrow, and Anthony Smith maybe pulls off the submission. There's not a huge gap between the first ranked light heavyweight and the 35th ranked light heavyweight. That's just state of the division.
Did you see Alex Pereira? All this criticism about the man's wrestling got a takedown on Daniel Cormier in the lobby on Embedded this week.
Oh, did he?
Oh, yes. I mean, the guy was like with his luggage checking in at the hotel, I believe. But nonetheless,
that sounds about right.
Yeah. Got a takedown on an Olympian. Michel Pereira, never a dull moment in this man's life, much less career. Taking on Ihor Potieria, and Pereira -600 favorite here. This man is so unpredictable, even though he's won 7 in a row. I would never feel comfortable putting money on this guy, knowing that he could do anything at a moment's notice, and continued that streak here. So Pereira drops him with a left jab and then decides to do like a giant flip on top of him where he nearly like knees this guy into unconsciousness. His shin comes down right on like the head and shoulder, which they're immediately looking at and are like, that could be an illegal strike to a grounded opponent. And I mean, he Potiera is definitely rocked from this, and Pereira just tightens up this guillotine, and Potiera taps but still goes out. And this ends in 54 seconds. Pereira is on top of the world. But all of us who are watching this are like, is this going to get – there's going to be a riot if this is ruled a disqualification or a no contest. And the officials are discussing it. Mike Beltran is conferring with the referee, but they award it to Michel Pereira, who gets his eighth win in a row. This has to be the most quiet win streak in the entire UFC.
You may remember this. The first time that we watched Michel Pereira so many years ago, I believe it was your exact words, where you're like, I would love if the UFC just kept feeding this guy cans forever. And I am totally fine with that. Give this Let's guy the it. Longest winning streak in UFC history against guys they pull off the streets, because this guy is so fun. When he goes in there, he does the most ridiculous stuff. He wins in like a minute. He almost gets himself disqualified. He's fun, and he's on like an 8-fight winning streak now. He could totally be a contender in the division. We have no idea. He's not fighting the top guys, but
and the streak
really
would have been longer.
Either.
He got disqualified against Diego Sanchez. Like that's where his streak would have been even longer at this point. I mean this guy, I would never have faith in IQ inside of the octagon when it comes to, because dude, this guy is just. He just does crazy stuff that might backfire, but it didn't in this case.
Yeah, that's crazy. He's won disqualification in a fight he was dominating away from being 10-1 in the UFC. an all-time record in the promotion for Michel Pereira.
And I would have no faith in this guy against the upper echelon at middleweight. But in this kind of, listen, Ihor Potiera, fine fighter, 26-8, but yeah, gets the win here. It was super entertaining, and the crowd went nuts, and they wouldn't have had this been overturned. And then the pay-per-view opened up with Paul Craig and Caio Bohalho, and there was an issue with Bohalho's ankle brace before they entered the cage, and the Daniel Cormier was just losing it. It's like, you can't do this to fighters right before a fight. And anyway, they settled that issue. Craig wants to pull guard. Caio does not engage here. He's using jabs on Craig. And then into the second, both men are landing. Bohalho lands the right and a jumping knee that puts Craig down by the cage. And Bohalho connects and just unloads as Craig goes down after this big left hand. And it's over. Caio Bohalho knocks him out at 2:10 of the second round. He wants Jared Cannonier next, who's already booked for a fight. You gotta double check that stuff before you call out guys. And, yeah, got a win and also got a performance of the night bonus. But this was a pretty impressive stoppage at the end, near the end of the second.
The finish of the main card, perhaps. Brutal knockout. That's a big call out, Jared Cannonier. I mean, that is jumping pretty high on the ladder after beating Paul Craig. But you know what? Shoot your shot. Why not?
How much of the prelims did you see, Eric, if at all?
I did see all the prelims.
Oh, you did.
Okay. I remember all the prelims? I don't know, but I watched them all.
Okay, well, this is going to be this first one had quite an interesting end here. We had Jack Shore against Joe Anderson Brito at featherweight. Shore, 6-1 in the UFC, moved up to featherweight in his last fight. Brito had won 4 straight coming into this and had just submitted Jonathan Pierce last November, so it was time for the big step up here against Jack Shore. So Brito is going for the lead leg early, and the leg would be the target, as Shore is just trying to secure underhooks and take this to the ground. Big clinch battle on the fence. And in the second, you can see Shore's shin is cut open after trying to check a leg kick, and it's just a faucet of blood as it's coming down the man's shin. And they go back to this clinch battle, and this leg is so damaged that Mark Goddard comes to check on the leg. And we get the most unnecessary close-up on ESPN here of this gaping hole in the man's shin. And this doctor comes in, and he's got his medical glove on, and dude's like penetrating the hole. He's like poking inside of it. It's like, Jesus, I'm not a medical professional, but I don't know if we need to be doing that with a HD camera right in front of it. And dude, they wave off the fight due to this. 3:35 of the second round, Joe Anderson Brito gets the TKO win. And then afterwards, we get the following message from Jack Shore's father/head coach. Well, what can we say? Ref stops the fight for doctor's opinion. Doctor stops the fight. I kick off and say it's a cut on the shin. We can continue. Jack asks to continue. The cut man says to the doctor he can work the cut and stop the bleeding. Doctor says it's fractured. Fight over. We get taken to the hospital, have an x-ray, no fracture. Couple of stitches and sent us home. Let fighters fight. We were chasing the fight, but still comfortable and confident. Awful way to end a fight. Jack is devastated. Thanks to everyone for all the love and support. To all the haters, go F yourselves. See you all soon.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, this was interesting. I don't know if I've seen a fight stop from a shin bleed before, honestly. But listen, this was
as Cecil Peoples once stated, Eric, leg kicks don't end fights.
Oh, wise words indeed. No, this was it looked like he got shot in the leg. I don't want to undersell this. They called it a bullet hole.
That was your analysis on the broadcast. I mean, it looked pretty like you could have clearly had the assumption that the man's leg is broken. This was a really nasty wound that he had. It looked like he had been shot.
I don't want to undersell it. At the same time, I do see why he'd be upset about the fight getting stopped. I think we've seen wilder things happen mm-hmm. in the cage and the fight continue over the years. So a tough end to the contest for Jack Shore. With that being said, Joe Anderson Burrito was winning this fight dominantly, I thought.
I thought that this was going to be, at worst, a very clear decision for Brito, and I just don't know how much this leg was going to hold up for Jack Shore. So it was clearly not a case of like Jack Shore was super competitive and this was like ripped away from him. But Joe Anderson Brito, I guess he's called out Dan Ige multiple times, and he did so again here. So that's who's on his bingo card to fight next. Karolina Kovalkiewicz, who has had one of the weirder careers in the UFC, fought for the title 8 years ago at Madison Square Garden against Joanna Jędrzejczyk, ended up losing 5 consecutive fights, which is very rare to happen in the UFC, and then turned things around and is coming into this fight on a 4-fight winning streak against, I would say, limited competition, and taking on Yasmin Lucindo, who is had 3 fights in the UFC and is coming off a win over Pollyanna Viana. So Lucindo, a much quicker fighter of the two here. She lands this left hook early on and stuns Kovalkiewicz, who is having problems with her eye. And Lucindo tries for the standing guillotine and is throwing knees from the clinch, mounts Kovalkiewicz near the end of the round. In the second, she nails her with a knee strike as Kovalkiewicz is entering. Whole round is on the feet, and the speed was a big difference here. Into the third, Kovalkiewicz is cut near her left eye, and Lucindo gets body control, takes her down to side control, moves to half guard, and ends the round with strikes. 30-27 for Yasmin Lucindo, and the 4-fight win streak is over for Karolina Kovalkiewicz. So we will see if this is if she just goes on another 8-year up and down run.
I suppose it's entirely possible, but this felt more like she has finally reached the ceiling on what she's doing on this late career comeback run here. Lucindo is just far quicker and able to easily outgrapple Karolina as well.
Yeah, they also mentioned this was the largest age discrepancy for, I believe, a female fight in UFC history, as Lucindo, 22 years of age, 16 years younger than Kovalkiewicz.
Remarkable.
Which is roughly the difference between you and I, probably, as well. So we're setting the record.
That's spot on, I think. I think that's spot on. Yeah.
So there you go. I'm the Karolina Kovalkiewicz of this combination. We move on to Mikdabek Orlbay against Elvis Brenner at 155 pounds with a Team Alpha Male in the corner of Orlbay. Orlbay made some bad decisions late in this fight. He had a relentless pace, getting a takedown, got 2 takedowns in this first round, all top pressure. In the second, Orlbay stuns him with a right hand on the feet and then gets another takedown. He's landing elbows, moves to the mount, and Brenner does get free of the position, but he is tired. And Brenner gets a reversal off a takedown and mounts Orlbay at the end of the second round. So this was like a dominant round for Orlbay, but Brenner did have a strong finish to it. Into the third, Brenner comes out and is trying to wrestle. And this is where the blatant fence grab occurs, and referee Fernando Portello decides immediately, no warning, point deduction, and all of a sudden, and they keep fighting. There's not even like a stop in the fight. It's just, you've lost a point. So all of a sudden, the announcers are blown away. They're like, wait a minute, you can deduct points in this sport? And Brenner controls the back, but then, and it's looking like Brenner is going to get this round 10-8 based on this fence grab. Orlby literally wins this fight in the final seconds where he drops him with a right hand. And I thought that was enough for Orlby. It was not enough of a strong round for Brenner. And so I had it 9-9 and it was 29-27 for Orlby. But dude, Orlby literally was this close to having a draw. Like within a second is not a exaggeration.
Yeah, this was a fun fight. Some really good scrambles throughout. Littered with drama. And I agree completely. I think Orlby stole this fight in literally the final second.
How do you feel about the point deduction? I mean, it's like I'm not going to get too upset about it. We complain all the time about these fouls and that it, but the argument in place is like if Steve Ersig had been deducted a point, you would have had just furious fans about. We are talking about this is not a 12 round boxing fight where a point deduction is a penalty, but not fatal to the card where or your fight outcome. Whereas in this, you're talking. Like a 3-round fight, that could be the difference in who wins a fight. How do you feel about warning versus just automatic point deduction?
So in theory, I have no problem with an automatic point deduction, but I do think there needs to be a precedent. You can't just like drop these on fighters when we've seen time and time. It's, oh, warning, a hard warning, final hard warning. If you do it again, I'm taking a point. I mean, a fight that they referred to multiple times throughout the broadcast, Chad Mendes versus Jose Aldo won. Aldo grabs the fence at one point, turns around, knees him in the face, knocks him out, runs out into the crowd. No one ever talks about it. No point was deducted.
Remember Jacare and Yoel Romero? That's one for the ages. I think you do have to kind of have a consistency. And I would state that if there were several of these instant calls, miraculously, I bet you there would be a lot less fence grabbing.
Or even better, maybe it's time to legalize fence grabbing.
Legalize fence grabbing. Okay. I thought you were going to say legalize like electrified fencing.
I always throw that out there because, listen, grabbing the fence, that is a completely natural reaction. If somebody is taking you down, your brain will just go, oh, grab onto this. So if you're going to fight with a cage, a fenced cage, maybe we should consider legalizing the fence grab. If not, make it like a plexiglass cage or something, okay? Just an idea.
Okay, the Marcotte Fighting Championships. I would definitely buy it on Triller. Next, we have Joaquim Silva against Dracar Close. They went 3 rounds here. Close is backing him against the fence, landing with clean right hands, and throws with the right and aims for the body with it with his knees. So nice combination there. He comes out with strikes at the start of the second while Silva's working in clinch. Close round, which unfortunately with this man's last name, everyone's got to make that joke whenever there's a close round. Third round, and I've been guilty of that too in the past, so... He who has not sinned cast the first stone. Silva lands a big shot in the third round, and Close responds, coming back with a right. And Close lifts him up and gets caught in a guillotine. This was the night of like just poorly executed slams where the neck was exposed. And Close tries to slam him and ends up in a mounted guillotine, but Close escapes and gets to his feet. Silva hits a combination, dropping Close, and tries for the choke. So I gave the third round to Silva, first two to Close, and he got the unanimous decision 29-28 across the board.
Dull fight and telefine around, I thought.
We go to the early prelims. We got the televised prelims and then the early prelims. One of the better performances on the undercard was Mauricio Rufi, who was making his UFC debut against Jamie Mullarkey. And Rufi is working really well behind his jab. He is sizing him up, very precise, and busts open Mullarkey's nose. And there's a spin kick by Rufi, which is partially blocked, rocks him with a right hand. And then in one of my favorite moments of this entire card, they bring on Dean Thomas for just an assessment for this early prelim fight. Like, hey, what are your thoughts on this fight? We're a couple minutes in, Mauricio Rufi against Jamie Mullarkey. Dean Thomas proceeds to commit the infraction that this sport is just immune to, from getting away from. He immediately compares him to Conor McGregor. He reminds me of Conor McGregor with his precision. I was like, do we always have to do this? Does anyone that shows just a modicum of potential have to be jettisoned to this insane comparison that forces me to take a great performance and have to push back with such adamant refusal to accept this?
No, not at all. If they're a strong grappler, they get compared to Khabib Nurmagomedov. And if they're young, they get compared to John Jones. So you actually have three to choose from.
Like, with due respect, this was not Conor McGregor, and Jamie Mullarkey was not Eddie Alvarez of 2016. But anyway, he did this beautiful scissor sweep of the legs, taking him down. That was pretty impressive. And then hits a jumping knee and drills him with these follow-up rights. And, dude, he is just tagging Mullarkey, who goes down to a knee, and Mike Beltran has seen enough and waves this off at 4:42 of the first round. A really great UFC debut for Mauricio Rufi, who also got a performance bonus.
Yeah, one of the more dominant performances of the night. Mullarkey, his movement is just so, I don't know how to word it, but like a stiff. His movement's so stiff that he's always a target for strong shots like that. I feel like I've seen this guy get knocked out pretty brutally, like four or five times in recent memory now. I have to wonder what his future is in this organization at this point.
And then a pair of decisions. We had Deonny Barbosa defeating Ernesta Karatskaya by unanimous decision, 29-28 across the board. And we had Ishmael Bonfim defeating Vince From Hell Pichel, also by unanimous decision, winning all three rounds. Any big takeaways from those two fights, Eric?
Yeah, absolutely nothing.
And it opened with Alessandro Costa stopping Kevin Borjas at a minute 35 of the second round. There were leg kicks that dropped Borjas twice in the second round and finished him with hammer fists, and then mounted the back to finish with more strikes. Costa also getting a performance of the night bonus. So two people on the early prelims getting a $50,000 bonuses, which is nice to see.
There were a lot of decisions on this card. So if you got yourself a finish, you were in good company today.
And that was the UFC 301 card. The only other notable item from the card was Mauricio Shogun Hua being announced for the UFC Hall of Fame. This is a pretty stacked class that they have announced for this year, between Frankie Edgar joining. It's a pretty good class. And Shogun was there as well. And it was remarkable to look at this guy. He had fought like three guys that were on this card, including Ihor Poteria in his final fight.
This was one of those inductions where it's like, wait, he's not already in? And I think he is in, as like, you know how whenever they induct a fight into the Hall of Fame,
right,
they will from thereafter refer to both fighters as UFC Hall of Famers? And I think that was the situation here, where his fight against Dan Henderson was inducted previously. And so he's been referred to as a UFC Hall of Famer for like 6 years now. And it's like, oh, no, he hasn't actually been inducted himself. He retired like 12 minutes ago. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yes. So the class for this year includes Vanderlei Silva, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, Frankie Edgar, and they're giving Anderson Silva and Chael Sonnen the first fight from UFC 117. And they're also giving the Forrest Griffin Foundation Award to Benil Dariush as well. So that will be part of the ceremony. So, yeah, quite a strong class, I would say. No one that would you would disagree with, I imagine.
No, it's all these UFC Hall of Fame classes are usually pretty stacked. What they have going for them is, by putting fights into their Hall of Fame, they can keep this going forever. I mean, you get to the point with like the WWE Hall of Fame where sometimes you think to yourself, wow, they're really running out of credible headliners, right? But the UFC will never have that problem because they can just induct fights forever. Like, it'll be a fight you haven't thought about in 10 years. It'll be like, I don't know, oh, they're inducting Dustin Poirier versus Charles Oliveira. Oh, yeah, that was a good fight, wasn't it? Sure.
Anderson Silva and Talis Lates going in.
Maybe not that one.
No, that one's not going in. Overall thoughts on UFC 301. Was this a night well spent for Eric Marcotte?
As a huge Jose Aldo fan, I was very happy to see him back looking fantastic. That is a fond memory from this card. The main event was strong. Not a pay-per-view main event, perhaps, but certainly a good fight at the very least. But no, this wasn't a night well spent. This was a long, long UFC card that was not worthy of a pay-per-view spot. This was like an apex fight night, okay? This was an apex fight night headlined by, with an extra two fights at the end. If Anthony Smith was the final fight on this, you'd be like, yeah, that's an apex card right there. But we did get some extra bonuses at the end, I suppose.
I'll go above. I'll call it an arena fight night card. It was arena level fight night. I go above it because I'm about to tell you what's coming up in the Apex over the next couple of weeks. So get ready for this. So next week, they are at an arena. They are at the Enterprise Center in St. Louis for Derek Lewis and Rodrigo Nascimento. I'll say the most interesting thing on this card is the return of Robles Despon, the guy that made his UFC debut back at 299 and won in 18 seconds, which was the second longest fight of the man's career. And he's taking on Waldo Cortez Acosta. So they are giving him the Michel Pereira treatment of just, we're going to throw you heavyweights and you're going to dispose of them. And it's going to be really entertaining on ESPN.
Waldo Cortez Acosta, the new fall guy, the new Jorgen De Castro. Lucky man, I suppose. I'm looking at this card right now. There's actually a couple interesting fights on here, but holy shit, that main event sounds so bad. I don't know if I'll be watching this. This looks dreadful.
Is there a chance we get the full five?
Of course there's a chance we get the full five. These heavyweight fights, they always go the full five, don't they? That looks bad.
The following week, May 18th, they're back at the Apex. I am not kidding. Edson Barboza and Lerone Murphy. That is the main event of the card.
Lerone Murphy, again, that main event spot. I guess he's like 6-0 in the UFC now, I suppose. That's a fine Apex main event.
I guess so. Then we will be back for UFC 302, which is going down June the 1st at the Prudential Center with Islam Makhachev defending the lightweight championship against Dustin Poirier and a 5-round fight between Sean Strickland and Paulo Costa. Other highlights of this card, Gilton Almeida against Alexander Romanov and Roman Coppola versus Cesar Almeida, Alex Morono against Nico Price. This is a very top-heavy card.
Yeah, I'm not feeling that one either.
That's 302, and then, of course, everything is leading up to 303. Did you see the teaser for 303, where it's Conor McGregor in the shadows just pacing back and forth with the Foggy Dew playing, and there is no representation of Michael Chandler in this promo. It's pretty much $65 for the return of Conor McGregor. That's how this is going to be promoted, and he will share the cage with a guy.
Yeah, one of the worst things that happened the other day is I think it was the UFC's ESPN account. They started just promoting the idea of Charles Oliveira taking Michael Chandler's spot against Conor McGregor. And all I can think is I think fans would be 1,000 times more into that. So why are you even throwing that out there? Conor McGregor will sell this by himself, of course. It'll probably be your highest or second highest paid pay-per-view of the year. And I expect we will hear absolutely nothing about Michael Chandler until he steps into the cage.
Yeah, John Jones has also stated he has a date, but he's going to allow Dana White to break the news. And is there any chance that they veer away from the Stipe Miocic fight? Or is that one just like, we have to promote and deliver this fight after all this time? Is that just, I just feel that even if you were intrigued by this fight when it was first discussed, by all the hiccups and start and stop they have had, man, I just feel like this fight is just like limping to the finish line of just get through this fight. So hopefully if John Jones has any fights left after this, they can get to some more compelling ones. Cause I don't know, my interest is very low in a Stipe Miocic fight, but do you feel that's, they're just committed to delivering that one?
You know, I was really into that idea when it was first thrown out there in 2017, but a lot of time has passed since then. And are they that committed to it? I don't know if they are. I feel like it's probably just a John Jones wants it. Stipe is a bigger name than the rest of these guys. Sure, let's do it. I don't care. But I don't care about any of this. It could be John Jones versus Tom Aspinall. It could be John Jones versus Sergey Pavlovich. It could be John Jones versus Stefan Struve. It's heavyweight. It's I don't care.
Eric Marcotte, everyone. He's going to give you the unvarnished opinion here on our UFC post shows. But that's going to wrap things up. Thanks to everyone for joining us here on this Sunday morning. We have lots of stuff up on the site. We have shows covering Backlash with myself and Wei Ting. Also, postwrestlingcafe.com. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson have a rundown of Wrestling Dontaku, the highlights, what you can check out and what you can skip. And we will be back later on this week with plenty more to discuss. So go check out everything that's going on in pro wrestling and MMA. And Eric, we will chat with you next month after UFC 302, a pay-per-view in New Jersey. I mean, we will have no shortage of things to talk about because New Jersey and a UFC pay-per-view, I think they just a match made in hell.
I can't wait.
Thanks, everyone. We'll speak with you next month.